All right. Welcome, guys. Today we have the honor of being joined by Ben Jacobson of Checker, where he's an engineering manager.
Yep.
For people who don't know you, do you mind sharing relatively quickly where all you have been before joining Checker about a year ago?
Yeah. I studied computer science at University of Colorado. In Boulder, and I kind of I graduated in 2010 and had been involved in the startup scene in Boulder for a few years during college, and then after college kind of stuck around town. I joined a ad tech company. We were building some ads for content marketing, and then I joined a competitive intelligence company. We were doing some data analysis. We were aggregating data for large corporations, and then a lending company, and then decided to move out here and join Checker, which is a background check company.
Got it. So you're not so much an accidental engineer. You're probably the second guest we've had on that's a computer science major.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say that I'm a little bit of an accidental engineer. I've always liked computers and I liked web design, but it never clicked that was like a thing people did as a career. And then when I got into college, I originally applied as a journalism major, and then I went to go sign up for a computer science course because I just liked it, and I thought it was interesting. They were like, well, you can't really take that unless you're a computer science major. So I was like, well, I guess I'm switching to computer science.
Fuck.
Yeah. So it's kind of an accident, I suppose.
So for the people in the audience who haven't heard of Checker before, like myself,
yeah.
Do you mind sharing real quick what Checker's service offering is? You joined there a year ago. You're an engineering manager there now.
Yep. Checker, at a high level, is an API for background checks. So background checks are these complicated kind of black box processes that no one really understands. And what we want to do is we make an API that allows people to integrate background checks into their products. Like, for example, a ride sharing company might need to onboard thousands of drivers a day, and we do background checks for them. And they can do that within their app, within their flow, you know, everything. And we kind of provide an API that lets them accomplish, you know, their checks the way they want to kind of do the checks.
So rideshare apps like an Uber or a Lyft might want to know whether a prospective driver has a criminal record.
Yep, basically. Criminal record, has been driving 50 miles over the speed limit, you know, that kind of thing.
Like speeding tickets.
Speeding tickets, sure. Exactly, yeah.
So what kind of data coverage do you guys have? And are you only in the United States at this point?
We are majority in the United States. We have, we do some Canadian background checks currently. Definitely intention to do international background checks at some point. But majority of our customers are United States. They do United States background checks.
So what degree of technology is there behind this, and what are the engineering problems that you guys are solving?
Yeah, so the engineering problems, it's easy to think like an API and think fast. Like you send us a post request and we get you back a response about the person. And that's not really how it works. Background checks are very slow and asynchronous. You send us a request for a background check for person A. We then kick off a lot of these processes where, okay, well, we need to go do a social security trace and we need to go get the address history that this person's lived at. And then once we have all the counties they've lived at, we need to go talk to all these different counties. Let's say they've lived at 10 in the past 10 years. Each county some might have digital records, some might have physical records. The ones that have physical records, we have to send people like literally into the courthouses to look up records, you know, stand in line, look up records, go into the back room, pull records, write down what they see, put it back into the system, send it to us, and then we, you know, convert that into JSON and then send it to, you know, our customers. All that could take, you know, on the order of minutes, hours, days, sometimes weeks. We're trying to make that faster, but it's possible weeks.
So. Okay. So I think a lot of our audience probably imagines at least entry-level engineering jobs involve HTML, CSS, mm-hmm. designing interfaces of software. Mm-hmm. But one of the interesting problems that I imagine you guys have, yep. is how do you uniquely identify a person?
Yep.
So we send Max Mountner to the Checker API.
Yep.
How do you guys figure out what counties to look at and that sort of thing?
Yep. So we have some PII about you, your first name, last name, date of birth, social. We use a few services to figure out, okay, here is the address history of this person, to kind of compile the list. So it's kind of the same services that credit bureaus use to like build, you know, if you've ever, you sign up for Comcast at this house, then you will start showing up on the list of, you know, this is where you've been associated with. And we can kind of assume that you've lived here. And so we gather these addresses and then kind of break down these addresses. It's complex and complicated, but like some counties are very harder to work with than others. Some are more digital than others. Some kind of are behind their own bureaucratic systems. Some counties go together. So like they kind of operate as a group of counties, and we have to say, well, if you've lived in multiple of these counties, we only want to do one request because we're kind of working with a group system here. So it'd be not optimal to send multiple requests. A lot of complicated logic goes into figuring out where to actually start gathering the data. And then basically the value that we provide is we look at this data, we get this record back. It could be you, it might be you, but it might not be you as well. So like just because we find a match with your name, and let's say with not your date of birth, but your date of year birth, like the year that you were born, the question then becomes, what is the probability that this is you or someone else? And you'd be surprised at how many other maxes there are in the United States.
I'm sure there are many false positives.
Tons.
And I might have a criminal record, even though I might not.
Yeah, totally. And you'd be surprised at how many other maxes were born on the exact day that you were born.
Mm-hmm.
And so it becomes harder, or that have the last four digits of your social.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it kind of becomes a probability game of like, you know, based on 350 million, you know, people in the United States, what is the probability that this record, you know, ends up being your record? And we kind of have this model built where looking at a lot of different, you know, we get data from the records, we get data from the candidate, how they all match. What's the probability that, you know, this is an exact match?
And God forbid somebody changes their name.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So, yeah. And that's, you know, a whole nother.
And a common occurrence when people get married or.
Absolutely. Or, you know, they go by aliases. Like, let's say you go by your middle name and not your first name. Well, you know, how can we figure that out? And how can we be more strict on the matches then?
So this service offering that Checker provides where you work is relatively or radically different from the other companies that you've worked for in terms of what they do. So where you were at previous to Checker, do you mind sharing who that was and what you did there?
Yeah, I was at a consumer lending company, Confident Financial. And it was kind of similar in the sense that we were, we had an applicant apply for credit, and we had to run not a background check, but a credit check, and kind of understand the applicant. Are they who they say they are? You know, if we're going to wire them $5,000, we need to make sure that they're, you know, they are who they are. We need to look up their history, their credit history. Do they have any outstanding loans? Stuff like that. So it's kind of very similar. And it's part of the reason why I kind of liked Checker is it's in this like highly regulated industry. So it's like, we can be innovative, but we have to do it in this way that's like compliant. And like, how can we figure out ways to like be optimal in this industry that is very old and like the laws haven't caught up. So it's like, you know, it's kind of an interesting challenge beyond just the technology.
I believe
to do that. Yeah.
So I know even before Confident Financial, you had the good fortune of landing an internship while at University of Colorado at Boulder. And this was a long time ago,
Yep.
10 years.
Yep.
Do you mind sharing about that, how you landed that first internship experience as an undergraduate student and what that was like and how it encouraged you to step into the career you're in
now? Yeah, totally. I was walking through the career fair at University of Colorado, Boulder. And there was a local company there presenting named Rally Software. And they were like this was like in 2007, maybe 2007. They were one of the early Agile companies. They were building project management software for this thing called Agile, which at the time was like pretty new. This the idea of sprints, and like you don't do this huge waterfall thing, you do this like little chunks of work thing. So it seemed like a very interesting company. I went there for a summer and interned, kind of working on their, they had a large Java app that was, very complicated and had a lot of business logic. And it was, the first time I had been exposed to a large code base like that. So I learned a lot, definitely.
But you were telling me about how you encountered Ruby for the first time.
Yeah, so while I was at this company, I was tasked with a kind of side project inside the company to manage their internal resources. And there's like ground up applications. So I was looking for frameworks to use to build this out. And this framework, Ruby on Rails, was like had just come out. This was 2007, I think it's like, it'd been out for a year. People had been talking about it a little bit. It's like, okay, I'll play with this. And I distinctly remember starting to play with it, like running a migration, which is something that like was a fairly new concept, but everyone had felt the pain of that before, and like using an ORM, and it was like, whoa, guys, this, we should look at this framework, and of course this company is like this giant Java company, and they're like, I don't think that's cute, but it's not going to be, we're not going to pay attention.
And
to
this is an Agile shop too.
This was an Agile shop. Yeah. And I was like, I don't know this, I think this is the future. And so I spent basically the next 10 years of my career going out of my way to figure out how can I use Ruby and Rails and, cause it's the funnest thing to work with. So
do you still use it today at Checker?
Yep. Checker is a Ruby shop. We don't use Rails, purely technically. It's a, sure. Ruby shop though. We use Active Record, which is, I think, 80% of Rails, basically. Oh.
And is Ruby.
And is Ruby. So our backends are all in Ruby, and then our frontends are all React, and kind of making that slow transition to React.
So one thing that I wanted to ask you about, having held a number of individual contributor roles as an engineer, yep, and now as a manager, is when you've joined companies in the past, whether currently at Checker or at Confident Financial or the companies before that, what was it like joining companies at different stages in their lives, whether it comes to number of customers or revenue or number of employees?
Yeah, I think that it's just a different set of challenges. When you join a company that's really small and you're just trying to figure out your customers, the challenges are, how can we build technology as fast as possible to like figure out if we can, if this even makes sense and this customer will like it, and like maybe that'll get us another customer and another one. And it's like all about iteration and, making things work quickly. The next phase is like you have some customers and they use you, and then you have more customers. And then that phase is like, how can we keep up with this? Like, how can we make sure that the stuff that we duct taped together to get this customer is actually going to end up working when we have 1,000 of these customers? And it's kind of like undoing the duct tape and like making it better. And then now it's like, okay, we've made this really nice ball of duct tape and it's like working pretty well. How can we, and it's serving this like industry really well. How can we now go find a whole new industry and serve it really well? Maybe, and it might take a whole, like it might take a little bit of work on that ball of duct tape to change it a little bit for this industry. How can we make sure that we don't, ruin the ball of duct tape that we have for this industry and then still serve this other industry? So it's like, it's really changing, kind of like the end goal and like the thing that you're trying to accomplish. And
so you were telling me when you first joined Checker about a year ago, moving from Boulder to San Francisco, that Checker was at this point in time where primarily their business was on-demand API calls.
Yep.
And since you've joined, the business has transitioned more into enterprise clients that have very large volume, I would guess,
yep,
of background checks they need to be made.
Yep.
What has that change looked like? Has that entailed you as an engineer interacting with your internal sales team, for example, as they try and figure out how to service as well.
Yeah.
Try to figure out how to service enterprise clients.
Yeah. It's a lot of collaboration internally to the company. So if initially when we were serving on-demand companies, we have API docs, and these companies have engineering teams, and they can read the docs, and then they can, you know, figure out what to do. And we're all engineers, so like we can be like, oh, we should add this endpoint. It makes sense. Let's do it. It's very simple to like build an API because we're talking the same language. As we go to more enterprise companies, it's less about our API and it's more about, well, do you integrate with our internal HR system? And it's like, well, not yet, but let's figure out how we can do that so that, you know, if they're moving massive amounts of candidates forward through their pipeline, how can we make it as seamless as possible to use Checker? So it's a lot of now like people integrating our API, and now it's like, okay, how can we integrate other people's APIs into our API to make sure like it's as seamless as possible for people to use us and get started? And we do that with integrations in like Greenhouse, for example. Like if you're moving a candidate through the pipeline, like now we can be part of that pipeline, like right with inside Greenhouse.
So once you guys are integrated with pipelines like applicant tracking service, ATS, like Greenhouse, you guys probably handle a very large volume of requests.
Yep.
You were sharing with me a statistic not related to applications or number of API calls you guys handle earlier before we started recording about what share of the U.S. population has a criminal record. Do you mind sharing that statistic again?
Yeah, so it's about 70 million people. So that's a lot of people in the U.S. that have a criminal record. And I would say that while a lot of people have records, one of Checker's mission is to be fair and accurate. So just because you have a criminal record doesn't mean like you don't deserve the job.
Oh, sure. And just to put that in additional perspective, there are 350 million people in the U.S.
Yeah.
So 70 divided by 350, that means 20%, one in five Americans has a criminal record of some sort or the other.
Yeah.
Approximately.
Yeah. It's a lot of people, right? And so what Checker does on top of just providing, you know, the highest quality data that we can to our customers is when we find, let's say, a record on someone's background, we actually have we run this analysis and basically point people to resources and say like, hey, you should reach out to this, you know, this group. They might be able to work with you to get this record expunged and removed from your background. We just started working on these features where if you get adverse actioned, which is like basically declined for a job because of something on your background, we can look at the thing that adverse actioned you and say, okay, well, you didn't qualify for this on-demand company, but based on our data, you could apply to these other ones, and it looks like you might have better luck there. And so it's like helping people kind of find jobs proactively instead of like, you know, something's on my background, like I can't do anything, or, you know, get frustrated about it because it's this black box system.
Does Checker dog food its own product? Meaning when you interviewed for a job, did they run a background check on you?
Yes, we do dog food our own products. Yeah. and I distinctly remember going through that process and going, man, I got some work cut out for me because, like I said, it was a lot of duct tape. And now I think we made a lot of strides in making it a better process all around.
For both the applicants,
clients, partners, everyone, and internal customers, like our internal users of the system to like, you know, do investigations and disputes and stuff like that, our products have gotten a lot better over the past year.
Awesome. Yeah. So taking a turn away from Checker, a large portion of our audience are people who are in the first 5 years of their career or may not have even landed their first full-time job. So as a hiring manager, and as a person who's probably been interviewing software engineering candidates for a number of years, what advice do you have for people that are common missteps, maybe? Yeah.
That's a good question. I would say always be learning. Like, I've been doing software for 10 years, and I'm not even close to knowing a fraction of what I need to know about the industry or how things work and stuff like that. So I would say always be learning. If you're trying to find like the first company to go to in your career, make sure it's one that you can learn from. Technically, business-wise, like question like why decisions are being made by the business and understand the impacts the technology you're building is going to have on the business and stuff like that. So I would say position yourself to learn as much as possible, always in your career.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I remember only maybe 5 years ago when the job title of data scientist became a thing.
Yeah.
It started very rapidly. And one thing that I'm curious about with regards to Checker and when you're at Confident Financial,
yep.
both businesses that are rich with data,
yep.
is whether you guys hire data scientists and yep. how that is a distinguished career
yeah.
from engineering
yeah.
at Checker.
So at Checker, we don't have a data scientist yet. We haven't made a hire for that specific role, but we just started working on our data team. So in the past year, we've made a lot of strides in liberating our data. So for a long time, so let's say you're starting to build an application and it's a Rails application, right? And you put all of your data in MySQL and then you're like, okay, I need to start dumping data for this other purpose in S3. And so you start dumping data into S3. And then let's say some other reason comes along and you say, well, we need to store documents in Mongo. So you introduce Mongo and now you have, you know, you have data in MySQL, Mongo, S3, and then you're using analytic services and those events are going other places. So the first step is to really build a data infrastructure to bring it all in one place. And that's something that we've just recently done within the last 3 months or so, mm-hmm. is allowing ourselves to really query, like cross-join the data and understand it more. And now that we have that infrastructure in place, now we can start having the conversation of like, what is a data scientist? Like, what are the goals of that person when they mm-hmm. come into the organization? And do they have the tools necessary to do the job? Because if you hire someone and they don't have the tools to do the job, then it's like, they're not going to, it's going to be bad, right? So you need to make sure that someone is set up for success in order to do that. Mm-hmm. And setting up the data infrastructure is a very different job than, you know, doing analysis of the data. So we are just now at a point where we have kind of like our data in one place, a Presto database. And we are currently in the process of exposing it to other parts of the organization. So people that aren't engineers, we're doing these workshops where we teach people SQL. So people can kind of start answering their own questions or get, you know, scratch their own type of itch or curiosity or understand the data themselves. That's not a data scientist, but it's kind of, it's the first step for us to like get people excited about what questions they can ask.
So yeah, for sure. So for members of our audience who didn't know about this before, one possible career track is data engineering.
Yep.
As opposed exactly. to data science.
Yep.
Which is a where with a lot of companies, even as mature as Checker, data science or hiring for a data scientist is potentially putting the cart before the horse.
Yeah, exactly.
So to speak.
Yes. yeah. And I mean, I think if you're a data scientist that can also roll up your sleeves and do the data engineering to get to the data, you're very valuable. But oftentimes companies don't really know that they need to get the data in one place first. Which is a mistake I think companies often make.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't have any other questions off the top of my head. Okay. I mean, these anecdotes and anecdata are super helpful.
Okay.
I think we're definitely going to do this again. This has been illuminating. I think one thing that I'd like to emphasize for our audience is how, if they put it in perspective of just how much data that you guys have at a place like Checker,
yep.
You guys have customers that are very large that yep. receive very high volumes of customers,
yep.
Particularly large rideshare companies.
Sure.
That is only one of your customers.
Right.
So the types of opportunities available to Checker as a business in monetizing in some form or providing feedback in some form from the data that you guys have aggregated across all of your customers
yep.
is tremendously more, an order of magnitude more than an individual customer of yours working with the data that you guys have given them. So,
yep, exactly. Yep.
With that, do you want to plug any roles that you guys are hiring for?
I'm an engineering manager, so I would say engineering roles, you know, yeah, of all kinds, including data science.
Specifically, what roles are the engineering team hiring for?
Yeah, so we hire generalists, basically. I don't want to say this term full stack, because I think that's...
A loaded term.
But we hire back-end and front-end engineers. Our front-end work has historically been low, but it's become more and more of a priority as we've gone into the enterprise. And our back-end work is, I mean, like I said earlier, we have this giant state machine that's trying to figure out what counties to talk to and what, you know, services they need to parse and stuff like that. So there's always work to do there. So any engineering role.
You mentioned Presto, but do you mind sharing a little bit more about what technologies and frameworks and programming languages you guys use in your stack?
Yeah. So our internal dashboard for customers and our internal teams is a legacy Angular application, which we are slowly decomposing into more modern React type applications. And then our backend, while not Rails, uses Active Record and Ruby, technically Sinatra for a lot of our lightweight endpoints. And then we are just starting to experiment with Go and protocol buffers to make our inner services kind of... They've mostly been REST, and now we're trying to kind of decompose them down to gRPC and stuff like that, which is more efficient, you know, easier to scale long term. And then for our data, you know, we do a lot of MySQL, Mongo, and direct dumps to S3 to archive kind of data. So it's I think that's a pretty modern stack.
Oh, agreed. Yeah. You got your JavaScript, your Ruby.
Yeah.
Ruby moving to Golang.
Yeah, definitely.
And some pretty traditional, robust data, database software.
Yep. And then we have a DevOps team, which is responsible for our deployment pipeline, and we are working on open source tools that sit on top of Kubernetes that basically allow engineers to write a Docker file and then ship it to the service, and it gets deployed for us. So it's we're working on open sourcing that, but that's been a really great way for our engineering team to increase velocity.
I believe it.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us, Ben.
Cool.
We'll talk again pretty dang soon.
Cool. Thank you.